Welcome to the Climatepedia podcast, your source for news and information on climate change, energy, and the environment. I'm Allison Kemmerd, and today we're talking about the new series of reports called America's Climate Choices.
My initial impression was that this was not necessarily something incredibly new. If you are somebody who's been following the climate change issue for a while, but the press conference kind of emphasized how much it rebutted the criticism against climate science over the past year, and how much it affirmed a lot of the science that has come out in terms of human role in climate change and what the potential effects may be.
That was Andrew Friedman, a climate policy analyst and editor here at Climate Central. Andrew was sharing with me his thoughts on the new reports about climate change from the National Research Council, released this past May. Congress commissioned the report back in 2008 to try and answer some of the toughest questions out there on climate change, such as, what don't we know yet about climate change? Is there anything we can do to slow down the effects of global warming? And how do we prepare to live in a warmer world? By reviewing the most current available research on climate change, the report is intended to provide a series of recommendations on what steps need to be taken and what policies need to be adopted as the climate changes in the coming years. Over the next few episodes of this podcast, we're going to take a closer look into each of these reports. To start out, I sat down to talk about the new report with some other people here at Climate Central, including Andrew, who you just heard. The report reviews the most current information on climate science and is more up to date than the fourth assessment report from the IPCC, which came out in 2007. I asked Ben Strauss, Climate Central's interim executive director, for his take on the new report.
So where does the America's Climate Choices report fit in that framework that there's an IPCC report coming out in 2007, and then it's 7 years later that the next one is coming out?
Well, it serves as a very convenient update. Like the IPCC, the America's Climate Choices report is an integration of the scientific literature that's out there. It's not doing new research, but it's summarizing the best research that we've seen in the last few years to give a current state of climate science, a current state of our understanding of climate impacts. And in that sense, it's very useful as a guide pole for interested observers or policymakers.
The advantages of this report is that it took into account the multiple years of studies available after the last IPCC report left off. That report was published in 2007, but it, in terms of the review process, it only incorporated science going up to 2005. So really, this one gave us 4 more years of data to look at, and I think the value of this report is more in terms of what policymakers can use and a signal to people in Congress and elsewhere of how we need to structure the climate research enterprise in the United States, which may not sound all that exciting, but is actually incredibly crucial if we're to figure out what we are able to do and what we want to do over the next couple of decades.
I thought that was a really interesting part. I listened to the opening part of the press conference again, and when Pamela Mattson starts out by saying, you know, the earth is warming, the climate is changing, my gut response was, I've heard this message before. These opening sentences are nothing new. So what is different about this? So have you heard anything, Ben, in the climate community, any response to this along those lines? You know, what's different about this report in a general sense?
Well, one perhaps narrower area where I think there's an important difference from the IPCC report that came out in 2007 and was based on science really up through 2005 came in the projection of the sea level rise that we might expect in the next century, basically doubling the range. And that would have great consequences for how city planners, for example, might see how they should plan public works moving forward and the development of their cities on the coasts. It could have great consequences for businesses deciding, you know, where to invest or site facilities, and obviously for homeowners in a whole range of people. And I think for each area that the report would have updated, there is important information for anyone interested in adaptation to the changes coming down the road that we expect.
Just to be clear, this new report doesn't focus just on sea level rise. In fact, it's just one of a number of areas of climate research that has been reviewed by this report because of its connection to global warming. Some examples of other topics covered in the report are how freshwater sources are bound to be affected by global warming, what public health issues may arise, and what role do cities play in climate change. But for now, let's stay on the topic of sea level rise. So what can we expect in the coming years for sea level change? For me, one of the most important components of the new report on the science of climate change is that it identified some key areas of uncertainty. This isn't to say that the Earth isn't warming. What I mean is that scientists aren't exactly sure how much the Earth is going to warm in the coming years, and they aren't sure exactly how much the sea level is going to rise up either. To get a better idea of what we do and what we don't know about sea level rise, I spoke with Ken Miller, a marine geologist at Rutgers University here in New Jersey.
I work on sea level change on all timescales, particularly longer geological timescales.
Miller uses satellites to study how the sea level has changed in the past 10 to 15 years, but he can also look much further back in time by drilling beneath the ocean's surface to look for signs of where the ocean used to be, like looking at rings around your bathtub.
But the geological record gives us some ground truth on how Earth has responded as a system to changes in carbon dioxide and changes in temperature. And one of those things that I'm most interested in my bailiwick is to understand how sea levels changed on all these timescales.
Using these different techniques, he's collected a record of how sea level has changed over the past 100 million years, up to and including our current time. 20,000 years ago, sea level was much lower than it is today, by about 130 yards. Keep in mind, though, at that time the planet was much cooler, and there was an awful lot more ice built up on land than there is today.
And Manhattan would have been covered by an ice sheet that would have covered the Empire State Building. And tying up of the water into those ice sheets would have lowered sea level approximately 120, give or take 5 meters.
For thousands of years since then, and up until just a few centuries ago, that ice was melting slowly but consistently. And as a result, the level of the oceans began to creep up, inch by inch, foot by foot. But when we go further back than 20,000 years ago, and now we're talking way back, about 3 million years ago, to a time when the Earth was warmer. Well, the situation was a bit different back then.
And the interesting thing about that period of time is that carbon dioxide in the atmosphere was about where it is today, okay? And the global temperatures were a couple degrees Celsius warmer, and sea level was higher, actually significantly higher.
We're talking 40 yards higher. So 3 million years ago, the area where many American coastal cities are located today, like New York, Boston, Los Angeles, and New Orleans, they were most certainly underwater. It turns out that while the oceans have been higher before, and the Earth was this warm at some point in history, there are some pretty important differences between that time long ago and now.
One question always comes up, and I'll use my best Al Gore, it's part of a natural cycle. Well, we can see from our work and work of others that the sea level rise that we see today is not part of a natural cycle.
Climate scientists agree that these rapid changes are caused by the incredibly large amount of carbon dioxide we've put into the atmosphere over the past few centuries. But what scientists still don't have a good idea of is how warm it's going to get in the next 150 years, or even how much the sea level is going to rise. Even in just the past few years, the predicted levels of sea level rise have changed. Which Mike Leminick, Climate Central's veteran science writer, was able to talk a bit about with us.
Well, if you look at the IPCC report itself from 2007, there was a projected range of sea level rise, and there was an asterisk. And if you look down to the bottom, it said something like, this excludes possible changes in ice sheet dynamics. And basically the point was that ice sheets melt when it gets warmer, but they also might move faster from Greenland down through glaciers into the sea, and that would be a different way of raising sea level. And at the time of the report, there was not sufficient information to say anything about what might happen with ice sheet dynamics, so they left it out.
But so up until that point, what was sea level rise being attributed to?
Oh, well, it was, so melting of ice and the the expansion of water as it warms. Water just increases in volume as it gets warmer. So those two things were the main contributors. But so they realized this other thing might have a significant impact, but they didn't know what it was. They couldn't calculate it. They couldn't project it. So they left it out and they said, look, please be aware. We're leaving this out on purpose because we don't know enough. And in the years since that report came out, there have been many more observations. And in fact, the ice sheets in Greenland and in parts of Antarctica are speeding up. They're flowing into the sea more quickly. They're dropping more ice, more icebergs into the sea. And so that is one significant reason the projections have been raised.
It was a small asterisk, but it should have been like an entire page,
right?
Of just an asterisk. And it was lost among a lot of the news reports because a lot of the media would just say, you know, the IPCC report projects sea level rise of blank to blank, and the implication was that was actually pretty small over the next century. But if you're leaving out some of the biggest potential sources, that really shouldn't be cited that way.
And you have to give credit to the IPCC for not pretending to know something it didn't know. You may criticize them a little bit for not making it clearer, making the letters bigger or red or something that said, by the way, don't take this too seriously because it's not complete.
So the New America's Climate Choices Report points out there may be more factors to consider when predicting future sea level rise, but there is still some uncertainty in exactly how much sea levels will change. As for an estimate of how much sea level rise we can expect in the next 100 years?
So we're looking at somewhere between 80 centimeters and less than 2 meters. But with a meter rise in sea level by the year 2100, that is going to have some severe implications for coastal communities globally. I started giving this talk called Sea Level Rise, Should I Sell My Shore House? A very New Jersey-centric view, but considering I have a shore house, so it's an appropriate one. And I said, would you sell your shore house for a 40-centimeter rise by 2100? You know, it's 1.2 feet. And I have no problem being a shore resident, being very sympathetic to my neighbors, and saying, well, you have a place there, we can't pull the rug out from under you. But any future development, and even current development, should probably have a no-building clause, that if your house is destroyed, you give the millionaire his $10 million check, but he can't rebuild. And I said this, I won't mention the congressman's name, but I mentioned this, and he's a coastal congressman from New Jersey. Mentioned this in his office, that this is what the policy should be, and they just left. They said, that's not going to happen in our district. And this is a case where national will and policy really has to have this discussion, because such a large percent of our citizens are coastal. I have a very strong lobby, and you have to be sympathetic that, again, when someone's house is destroyed, as Americans, we're going to pitch in and rebuild and do the barn raising and help them. But that's probably not the right thing to do. It is not the right thing to do.
We continued our discussion at Climate Central by looking at what the New America's Climate Choices reports say about communicating science to policymakers.
Wasn't one of the aims of this report to also inform policy and decision-making, instead of just relaying scientific information?
Yes, it was and it is. It's not necessarily the point of the first. America's Climate Choices is a series of reports, so it's not necessarily the point of the first report that was issued. There's sort of a synthesis report that will be issued later, and they'll all be compiled into a giant report that'll make for really good bedtime reading. But I think that, you know, it really made very clear that the United States' research program, called the U.S. Global Change Research Program, which has a budget of somewhere over $1 billion, is not really aligned very well to meet the challenges that at least these experts think exist. So it's not really designed to help a mayor of Ocean City, Maryland, figure out whether it's just going to be Ocean, Maryland, rather than Ocean City. You know, it's not designed to help people make adaptation choices and specific mitigation choices. So a lot of things are happening right now, and this report is kind of designed to show the way forward.
But they're not going to recommend policies, right? They're just going to say, you know, here are things you need to know in order to formulate policy.
It's not going to as far as I know, it's not going to recommend, you know, we need to institute a cap and trade program, for example.
Right.
It will discuss such options.
Right.
But like the IPCC, it doesn't tell you what to do.
So in order to make the best policy decisions for adapting to climate change or mitigating climate change, we really need to have a more precise understanding of, say, how much global warming is going to occur in the next century or how much sea level is going to rise in the coming years. And we also need to find a way to communicate that information more effectively to people making policy decisions. These ideas are really at the core of the new reports from the National Research Council. Next time on the Climatopedia podcast, we're going to take a look at another report for the America's Climate Choices series, this time focusing on what can be done to minimize the effect of global warming in the coming years.